I think everyone is surprised, including the Taliban itself.
Taliban take control of Afghanistan. It's Monday, August 16th. This is VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. We're online. Find us at VOA Asia Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube. Also ahead, concern for Afghan women and children. Kabul residents share comments from the street. Afghans flee to Turkey. Help for interpreters and virtual tours. It's all on today's VOA Asia.
اوسنی وضعیت کې د امنیتي او دفاعي قواو بیا انسجام زموږ لومړی توپ دی.
President Ashraf Ghani told Afghans in a 2.5-minute recorded message Saturday that he intended to fight the imposed war and would make sure the security forces were up to the task at a time when the Taliban seemed to be inching closer to the capital, Kabul, by the day. It took less than a day for the Taliban to enter Kabul, seize the presidential palace, and accelerate a flee from the city that included Ashraf Ghani himself. U.S. officials watched armed Taliban fighters move into the Afghan capital as the top U.S. diplomat, Secretary of State Antony Blinken, described the scene as heart-wrenching. Taliban leaders declared victory Sunday in the lightning-like offensive as the last of the Afghan security forces melted away, leaving the gates to the Afghan capital open to the insurgent forces. Despite claims by Taliban that their fighters were securing parts of the capital, a U.S. official told VOA that the U.S. embassy itself, as well as Hamid Karzai International Airport, were safe. Michael Kugelman, senior associate for South Asia and program deputy director at the Wilson Center, says the situation appeared inevitable whenever the United States had decided to leave Afghanistan.
I think everyone is surprised, including the Taliban itself. I think that it was inevitable that after Biden announced his decision to withdraw, that the Taliban would ramp up its offensives to try to pressure the Afghan government. But the speed with which it has been able to take over so much territory, including a shocking number of provincial capitals, in just a few days after having never done that essentially over the last 20 years, it's quite remarkable, but ultimately it's quite heartbreaking.
Kugelman says developments in the last few days pointed to the fall of Kabul.
Well, I mean, for a long time, Afghanistan or the Afghan government, the Afghan people have been concerned that the U.S. would abandon Afghanistan to its fate, as it did several decades ago. The U.S. had been sending signs, had been sending signals in recent days that it was going in that direction. I mean, it issued a statement asking all, or basically commanding all Americans in Afghanistan to get out of the country immediately. There had been leaked reports suggesting that the U.S. was planning for potential evacuations of its embassy personnel. So I think it was only a matter of time when the security situation completely deteriorated, as it has in recent days, that the U.S. would leave. And I think that absolutely, I mean, symbolically, it's huge, because I think that this is really the U.S. diplomatic presence had been really the last visible vestige of U.S. commitment to Afghanistan. I mean, the funding, the financing will continue, but you can't see that. You have an embassy that's staffed with people there. I mean, certainly, sure, they're sequestered in their embassy. They don't get out much. But the fact that they're there was important. But the fact that the U.S. is now evacuating so many of its diplomatic personnel, I think that'll send a very powerful message, not just within Afghanistan and to the world, that the U.S. is on its way out, that it's essentially giving up. Certainly, U.S. rivals will take this as a sign of weakness. But I think at the same time, there will be plenty of countries that see this as, you know, the optics are terrible, but that it was just a matter of time before the U.S. concluded that it had done all it could in Afghanistan to try to bring a semblance of stability, and that there was no avoiding these types of bad optics, that eventually the U.S. would have to leave. And whenever it left, the Taliban was guaranteed to launch an offensive. So I think that reaction and perceptions to these U.S. moves would differ depending on what the country is.
He adds the Afghan government failed to rise to the level needed to maintain security.
Given how difficult things are now, one doesn't like to play the blame game. But I do think that this is a failure of leadership on the part of the Afghan government. For quite some time, there had been concerns that the Afghan security forces were not getting enough equipment. They weren't getting paid on time. They were put in a tough spot where they were facing these growing Taliban offensives. And I think that the Afghan government simply was not responsive to that. It was not coordinating with the Afghan military to ensure that the troops had what they needed. So there's been a morale crisis within the military. And I think that one of the big stories in what's been happening over the last few days is that this is not a situation where the Taliban has been fighting the Afghan forces in these really intense battles and then triumphing. The Taliban is essentially waltzing in to many of these areas where you have very little resistance, and in many cases, Taliban soldiers have surrendered. So I think that this is a failure of leadership. You never should have had a crisis like that within the Afghan military. And, you know, for a number of years, the Taliban has essentially been preparing the grounds for what it's done over the last few days. In recent years, it's been able to seize a lot of rural territory and gain footholds in areas not far from cities in order to position itself for eventual urban offensives. It's also been able to seize a whole lot of heavy weaponry over the last few years, most of it from Afghan forces, but also some from NATO forces, too. So in other words, the Taliban was very quietly, or not quietly, but it was very gradually, but consistently developing its strength over a period of years, basically positioning itself to do what it's done over the last few days.
Michael Kugelman, Senior Associate for South Asia and Program Deputy Director at the Wilson Center. More on women and children in Afghanistan in just a moment. These are among some of the top Asia headlines you'll find right now on voanews.com. Thai riot police and anti-government protesters clash in Bangkok. Hong Kong's largest protest group disbands. Australia's New South Wales announces snap lockdown. Analysts say China expanding influence in Africa via telecom network deals. Philippine court tosses libel case against journalist Maria Ressa. Find expanded coverage of these stories and much more when you visit us on Facebook at VOA Asia, Instagram, Twitter, and on our website, voanews.com. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. We continue with VOA Asia. As the Taliban take over Afghanistan, aid workers vow to continue civilian support, but acknowledge the situation is looking grim for the most vulnerable, including children. Women in particular fear a return to the harsh treatment they endured the last time the Taliban controlled the country in the 1990s. VOA's Arash Arabasadi has more.
Shuttered storefronts Sunday in Kabul as the Taliban's campaign across Afghanistan reached the capital. Violence pushed civilians from their homes. Most of them are women and children. Five fleeing families found refuge in this small house. Among them are three widows and many orphans with nowhere else to go and for whom school is no longer an option. Displaced widow Guldastar says she lost her husband and three sons to the fighting. She tells VOA her grandchildren now provide for the family as trash collectors in Kabul.
Look at these little kids. They are collecting paper and plastic from garbage. Is this work for little kids? What did Ashraf Ghani do for us? What did Karzai do? What did Taliban do for us? They widowed our girls. We've been here for months. No cooking, no meat, no good clothes or shoes. They're still trying to get medicine.
With the Taliban bulldozing through Afghan security forces, those bringing humanitarian aid face tough choices.
We are aiming to be able to stay and deliver the assistance that is really critical right now, but also have contingency plans for if the situation continues to deteriorate, how we keep our staff, both national and internationals like myself, safe.
As Taliban fighters are set to take control of Afghanistan, human rights workers worry most about Afghan girls who, under Taliban rule, were not allowed to go to school, and women who could not go out in public without a full-body covering and male escort.
The Taliban still have same attitude, same behavior, same philosophy for their own self, like that they have their own war. And it's really not possible, or it is difficult for all people of Afghanistan, I'm sure, and particularly for women and the youth.
A displaced man identifying himself as M. Omar tells VOA his family just wants a normal life.
Taliban, you have mothers and sisters like us. The government, too. You have families and mothers and sisters. For God's sake, stop the fighting. For the sake of the Holy Book, stop the fighting. If there is no war, we can go home and work to provide for our families. We left everything behind.
These displaced Afghans say the Taliban set landmines around the homes they fled. They say their children lost limbs. Arash Arabasadi, VOA News.
Still ahead on VOA Asia, speaking with Kabul residents on the street. Happening now in Asia, a mudslide triggered by torrential rain in Nagasaki Prefecture in southwestern Japan killed at least one person. Two others are still missing. The mudslide hit two homes with four people, one presumed dead, another rescued, two missing, according to the Fire and Disaster Management Agency. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. Thanks for being with us today on VOA Asia. With their swift military victories across the country, Taliban easily rolled into Kabul Sunday. VOA's Aisha Tanzim talked to people on the streets of the Afghan capital just before the Taliban arrived to find out how they feel.
I'm on the streets of Kabul City, kind of part of central Kabul. There are lots of people here, evening rush hour traffic going. I want to find out how people are feeling at a time when Taliban seem to be nearly at the gates of Kabul. They attacked Maidan Sheher, which is 40 kilometers from the city. The government forces fall, as they have in many other provinces, and retreat or surrender, then Taliban could be around Kabul. So let me go and talk to a couple of people here. Hello, sir. How are you?
Good, good.
May I have your name, please?
Yeah, my name is Ruhullah.
Ruhullah,
you can call me Zimi.
Okay.
Yeah.
Zimi, tell me, you're watching the news, you're hearing the news.
Yeah, every day.
Well, how are you feeling?
Feeling very afraid of this situation, because it's getting tense and day by day.
Are you planning to stay in Kabul or are you planning to leave?
I don't think so. If I could, I'll just go today. But there is no way, you know. I have a bachelor in law. So if Taliban gets here, I don't think I could have a job. I don't think I could have a bright future in here, you know. I have two daughters. And I'm worried about them as well.
So the Taliban have issued multiple public statements. They have said that people should not worry, that they will not go on a killing spree, that women will be able to go to school. Do you believe them?
It's hard to say that. You know, it's hard to say that. Because their mindsets are still the same.
So you were a child when Taliban were around the first time. Do you hear stories from your family members, parents? What kind of stories do you hear from them?
I do. They have tortured my mother. They have,
What do you mean tortured your mother?
Like, they were, you know, they had a long, what do you call it?
Lashes?
Yeah, lashes, and beat my mom.
They beat your mother up for not wearing a hijab?
Yeah, she had a hijab, but I think they were thinking that's not proper hijab or something.
Thank you very much.
No worries, thank you.
As you heard, one part of the story, people who are worried about Taliban coming, they're worried about their future. There's another side of the story, the poor people who say their lives will not change much. They're doing their job, they'll continue to do their job. The two sides of the story, on one hand, fear, anxiety, you know, people are not sure about their future. On the other hand, the poor people who say their lives have never changed, it'll stay the same. They're selling fruit or doing whatever they're doing to make their daily wages, and they'll continue to do that. Aisha Tanzim, VOA News, Kabul.
Read and see more on Afghanistan on VOA Asia social media.
VOA Asia Facebook is the choice of millions to see and read the latest stories about Asia and the United States. Follow us on VOA Asia Facebook and say hello online or on your smartphone. Subscribe to all of our platforms for free. See, hear, and read and share all of the latest from VOA Asia anytime. VOA Asia is your trusted source for news and great features.
This news from VOA Asia. New Zealand Prime Minister Jacinda Ardern says her government will continue to pursue its ambitious COVID-19 elimination strategy indefinitely. She outlined a cautious and staged approach to reopening the country's borders to some foreign travelers early next year. The borders will remain closed for the rest of this year. You'll find this and more on VOA Asia Twitter and Facebook. This is VOA Asia. As we continue VOA Asia, families are fleeing Taliban forces overrunning Afghanistan. Some refugees say their escape from certain death has left them with an uncertain and dangerous future. Heather Murdoch files from Van in Turkey.
These are the bodies of unknown men, women, and children who died trying to flee war, persecution, and extreme poverty. They were found in border areas of Turkey, or amid the wreckage of broken boats on the shores of Lake Van, a popular people-smuggling route. Despite the danger, as Taliban forces take towns, cities, and villages in Afghanistan, families are flocking to the borders, and many are crossing Iran to seek refuge in Turkey. In Taliban-controlled areas, they say, anyone associated with the Afghan government, a foreign company, or identified as an ethnic Hazara is in danger of being murdered. Farid Bereksai, a former army commander, says the Taliban asked him to join, and when he refused, he was advised to flee before he was killed.
It's a disaster in Afghanistan, and it's getting worse. So many provinces have been taken over by the Taliban.
Ongoing battles have closed schools and businesses in many places, and refugees say Taliban fighters are already enforcing their draconian version of Islamic law.
We receive lots of threats and attacks by the Taliban. Many of our friends and teachers from our university were killed.
In this crowded apartment, other families say women and girls in much of Afghanistan are already living as they did in the 1990s, when the Taliban controlled the country.
Even now, women can't go out to the bazaar or for education. It's not secure.
But families who flee to Turkey have no access to humanitarian aid or a clear route to any kind of legal status. Along the way, they risk being captured, detained, beaten, or worse. Many are deported not long after they arrive in Turkey. Bereksai and his companions are not sure where they can go to be safe, so they are attempting to walk about 1,500 kilometers to Istanbul. He says if he had known then what he knows now, he may never have come.
It would be better to die in my homeland. There were just too many threats. But I thought going to Istanbul would be easy. But it's dangerous and the families face misery and humiliation.
But they say there is no way they can afford to reverse the trip. And even if they did, they would likely be kidnapped or arrested on the way. The only direction they can go now, they say, is forward. Heather Murdoch, VOA News, Van, Turkey.
Making headlines in Asia, one of Hong Kong's most prominent pro-democracy organizations has announced it will close immediately. The Civil Human Rights Front, or CHRF, has been responsible for some of the largest street demonstrations in the city's history, especially during the 2019 anti-government protests. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, the U.S. government has accepted more than 1,200 Afghans under the Special Immigrant Visa Program. Those left behind worry for their lives now that the Taliban have reached Kabul. VOA's Carolyn Pursuti has the exclusive story of two former interpreters who say they are in grave danger.
Hajig moves from city to city for safety from the Taliban. For 11 years, he worked as an interpreter for U.S. Special Forces, braving firefights across Afghanistan, as he told VOA via Skype.
In local province, in Kabul, a lot of these places, Nuristan, Kunar, Nangarhar province.
Haji, the name we use to protect his identity, has U.S. awards for his shrapnel wounds and for saving the lives of two Army captains.
They saved me, I saved them, because we are teammates.
In 2010, the Taliban kidnapped Haji's 9-year-old son because of his job and asked for ransom.
They know I'm working with the American forces, and they are infidel, and you are also infidel because you are working with them and you providing all kind of help to them.
The Afghan police rescued his son a few weeks later in a gun battle with his kidnappers. He says they killed an older son a few months ago. Now Haji is trying to save his own life after cell phone threats from the Taliban.
They tell me they know my place, where I'm staying, and they were coming after me.
Haji applied for a special immigrant visa, an SIV, more than 3 years ago. The embassy told him processing is delayed. President Biden said this about interpreters like Haji.
There is a home for you in the United States, if you so choose, and we will stand with you just as you stood with us.
But the process is so complicated.
Ismail Khan came to the United States on an SIV 7 years ago. He was an interpreter alongside Haji, seen here on the right, whom he nicknamed GPS when he spoke to VOA on Skype.
He knew where to go, route to take, what would be the easiest, where are possible places for them to ambush us to make sure that they are alert. He tried everything to make sure that his team survive and be successful.
But Khan worries for his former colleague.
They are after him. He's going to get killed if he doesn't get out.
Those who helped the Americans often protest in Afghanistan for safe passage out. Since January, the Biden administration has approved 2,500 special visas for Afghans who assisted the military. And 1,000, like Khan, have settled in the U.S. But there are many still there, including an interpreter we will call James.
And they're about to take over.
James has been denied the special visa because he cannot provide paperwork proof of his employment.
It's really scary. It's really scary because brutal Taliban, they never forgive us.
James told VOA that fears for his safety and that of his family keep him awake at night. And like Haji, he worries what will happen after the complete withdrawal of U.S. troops on August 31st. Carolyn Pursuti, VOA News.
Amid the serious news in Afghanistan, we'd like to end on a slightly higher note. When the pandemic paused global travel in 2020, some tour guides moved online to lead live stream tours of popular destinations. Matt Dibble looks at how virtual getaways may be here to stay.
This youth leadership program in North Carolina usually takes a trip each year to celebrate its graduating seniors. But during the pandemic, there was no leaving home.
So I said, well, how can we do something so that they are at least being given the experience of traveling?
Evana Ross, director of the program, landed on the idea of a virtual tour with an Israeli company called Hapator. The students chose Australia for their destination.
Come and join me as we learn all about Australia's plants and animals.
The tour was live streamed and interactive.
He was very engaged with us. He made it fun. He was funny. I saw different mountain structures, different types of birds. It looked like a whole new world, you know.
Dominic DeRozzi has been a professional tour guide in San Francisco for over 30 years. But in 2020,
my normal work schedule just collapsed.
With a few pieces of equipment and software from Hapator, he was ready for live streaming.
You are on the main drag of Chinatown. Hi, Lily.
During the tour, participants can ask questions.
The fortune cookie, as we know it, was invented right here in San Francisco.
Even as travel to the city is picking up, DeRozzi thinks virtual tours, which started about $14, are here to stay.
It comes at a good value to give people, you know, a one-hour slice of a city or a destination.
We never try to replace real tourism. We're trying to create an additional exposure to new places, maybe a niche destination.
Almost like being there, minus the smells and the tastes. Matt Dibble for VOA News, San Francisco.
That's all the time we have for our program today. Thank you for joining us on VOA Asia. The Afghan story continues to develop minute by minute, hour by hour. You can follow it online at voanews.com and on VOA Asia's social media platforms, Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, and Facebook. And we'll be back tomorrow with more developments on VOA Asia. We thank our team for helping bring this program to you each and every day. Service Chief Diane Gao, Ira Melman, Doug Bernard, Keith Lane, Amy Heibels, and Chris Cascao. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. We hope you have a good day today. Be safe. Be well.